It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. I'm very happy to have with me as my returning guest, Kristen Gieselin, who is a consultant. She's an intuitive, and she's a mindfulness mentor. She is certified in Theta Healing, Voyager Tarot, PrEP, Relationship Education, and Workforce Development. So any of you out there that, after listening to Kristen this morning, feel that that would be a good fit for you to bring her into your company to do some consulting work, she is available. And why don't you tell them how they can reach you before we get started?
Okay, certainly. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Lucy. And thanks for having me back on the show. I'm very excited about today's topic, mindfulness, one that's near and dear to my heart. So I can be reached either at my Facebook page, which is Kristen Gieselin, G-E-E-S-L-I-N, and I'm one of those Kristens that spells my name I-N-M-S is the Facebook page, and my phone number is 727-678-3761, and my email address is Kristen Gieselin, K-R-I-S-T-I-N-G-E-E-S-L-I-N, number2@gmail.com. And I am about to get a web page up finally, so that's exciting news.
I know when I got the radio's web page up before we ever had the show going live, it was so much fun to actually see it. And of course, we've evolved with that page a little bit recently. So if anybody hasn't been to my page for a while, it is synergyconnectionradio.com. And there's a few more things there for people to actually look at and maybe understand better as far as health and wellness goes. We'll mention that more at the end of the show. So we're going to be talking about mindfulness. And that is a topic that if people are doing any shopping like at Sprouts or Nature's Food Patch or something like that, I'm seeing the word mindfulness on almost all of the magazines these days. So I think that people are beginning to understand that in our crazy turmoil of life that we have here, being mindful is one way to kind of bring it down a little bit. So maybe you want to address, you know, as far as mindfulness for you, what that means, and how you want to, you know, begin talking about it this morning.
Well, I think it's exciting times. You know, the fact that the word mindfulness is everywhere brings up the conversation about what is mindfulness and how does it apply to your life.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's been about maybe 60 or 70 years that this has been percolating, you know, into this culture. And in a big way, and it's exciting. I think overall I feel excited and happy about it. I am a little bit protective of mindfulness because it's associated with my primary practice for many years, Buddhism. And I think it's important that it's not completely taken out of context. So that's the only downside to when something becomes very popularized, that it could be watered down, or it could be a small slice of it could be taken instead of the whole, you know, pie or the whole, you know, the full meal. And maybe you don't get as balanced. You know, everything is more powerful when it's seen as part of a whole, as you understand,
right,
with body, mind, spirit.
So
there's sort of certain things to be aware of even in your pursuit of mindfulness.
Right. I'm thinking about what you just said, because, you know, if you have a pie, and so maybe your favorite pie is cherry, and so a piece of cherry pie is good, but looking at the whole pie is even better, you know, as far as the beauty of it.
Right. When you see it, exactly. Uh-huh. You go, ooh, you're more impressed when you see a whole piece of pie.
A whole piece, right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
or a whole pie. Yeah.
And so I think with mindfulness, especially as it relates to Buddhism, it is much more complicated. And it takes more time to understand and make it become an intrinsic part of your life, as opposed to just the word mindfulness, and then thinking about it in terms of being in the moment. Right. Being in the moment is important, but it's so much more than that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, in a sense, you know, the idea that this can be a focal point for opening up conversation about spiritual development, you know, as one of the avenues to learn to understand who we are, you know, as spiritual beings, you know, that's very exciting. I guess the part of it that I want to make sure people get is that when we use the word mindfulness, we really need to define what term, what are we really actually saying at that moment?
Yeah, what is that word? How do you define that word?
Exactly. And so I'm sure right now, if we were to say to our listeners, what do you think of when the word, you know, when you hear the word mindfulness, if people were reporting in, we'd be hearing a lot of different things.
Right. So what do you think that most people think of when they read the word or they say the word that I'm trying to be mindful in my life? What do you think they are really saying?
I think a lot of people would like to have less stress and more calmness and peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that there's a pretty clear cultural connection now between mindfulness practices and being able to slow down the squirrel cage that the intellect actually, you know, can bring into our lives. Thought, worry, you know.
So a lot of people that have listened to me in the last couple of weeks, they've heard about me talk about this device, and you've used it, the Inner Balance.
Yes.
And the Inner Balance, Greg Braden, who is part of HeartMath Institute and does a lot of other things too, but, you know, he talks about that heart coherence, that when we are living from our heart as opposed to living out of our heads, our lives are so totally different. And I think that's probably a lot of what you want to address, is where do you spend the majority of your time? And if you're spending it in your head, then that's not where mindfulness really lives.
Right. And in fact, the way I understand the word mind, you know, in most Eastern paths really has more to do with heart.
With heart. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when in fact I've been in talks where I've heard my teacher say, show me your mind. Where is your mind?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, that's kind of an abstract thing. It's not,
it is.
There isn't
it
really
is.
A spot where the mind is located. So,
right.
So, and then of course, also coming out of, you know, previous to Buddhism, the Christian mysticism, you know, I think of the divine energy, spirit, and infinite intelligence as the mastermind. So it's through our hearts, though. It's through that compassion. So the word that I would bring into the conversation is compassion.
Okay.
So applying mindfulness to me has to do with applying compassion and wisdom in whatever it is that we're doing.
Right.
And growing that, you know, over time through whatever means, you know, comes to us, however we're guided and what we're shown, you know, in terms of our life path.
So for you, I know that you studied in India, right?
No. My teachers actually left Tibet because it was, you know, not safe. And, you know, and they lived in India, but they are in the United States.
Oh, so you went to be with them.
Right, but they're here in the United States. But I did study for two times. I did three-month, three-year retreats where I was focusing much more on that element in my life. I was still working and living a regular life, but all of my, you know, what people would commonly consider downtime was spent near the teachers or doing sadhana or, you know, something related to service to the community or something like that.
So maybe I would say the majority of people have no idea what sadhana is.
Right. Well, that's actually right. Like a structured prayer sequence.
Okay.
And during that time, there's a recitation of mantra and prayers. Mm-hmm. And so there's a shaping of intention.
Do you create your own mantra?
No. They're all pretty much set. They've been done the same way for thousands of years.
Okay.
So by following that particular pathway, it's sort of like being on a consciousness superhighway.
All right. Now, I have a question that I know some people are probably going to have. And that has to do with if you were Roman Catholic.
Yes.
All right. So there is certainly a rote number of prayers that are said in all aspects of probably every religion.
Yes.
And how much is that maybe similar to the sadhana?
I don't, you know, that's a really excellent question. I think the whole, doing anything without your heart in it, mm-hmm. without your mind mm-hmm. in it, without
just
your intention
it.
In it,
right.
it's not, you're not doing it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And,
do you know, I'm going to interrupt here for just a second because this is so vivid a memory for
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
I was Catholic for a number of years. And my son was probably about five or six years old. And we were going, you know, to Mass. And his awareness level has always been incredibly high.
Right.
But he was noticing that after people went to communion, they walked out the back of the church. They didn't stay. And after, you know, Mass was over, he asked me that question. He said, why does everybody leave? And that kind of addresses this, is that the intention was never really there. It was something that was more or less mandated that you go to church on a regular basis, or at least go to, whatever, you know, that was going on.
It felt like they were fulfilling maybe an obligation.
Yes.
Rather
yes.
than actually engaging in a type of ritual that brought them closer to their own wisdom,
right.
you know, and compassion.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so interesting that at his young age...
He noticed that.
And it was like, no, they're not here, you know, for any other reason than that obligation that, you know, my faith says I must attend. And I thought that was so fascinating coming out of a 5 or 6 year old's mouth.
Well, actually, I think that that is a good thing to bring to light. And
mm-hmm.
that's a good thing to continue to talk about. Because he does, you know, children are just nice, natural observers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're not making any judgments about what they saw. They're
mm-hmm.
just asking a question.
Right.
Well, why is that?
Why is that?
And ultimately, mindfulness, that's one of the big parts of mindfulness is why is that? Why is that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When we are able to observe whatever's going on and ask that question, then we can go into deeper insight and awarenesses, you know,
exactly.
about ourselves and our universe. So children are naturally in what we call beginner's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And beginner's mind is where all learning takes place. There's the conditioned mind, which is what happens after you learn. And then there's the mind that's happening before you learn certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So when we meditate, when we do meditative practices or clearing, you know, a lot of people get into that unconditioned mind state when they're doing maybe an activity like running or whatever. When they drop out of where they're putting programming in and they're sort of letting go of programming,
mm-hmm.
it's important to return to an open mind state, because if you can't ever get there, then your world cannot expand and grow and develop.
So how do you help somebody get to that open mind state after they've been conditioned for years and years and years? They've been in the corporate world, out in the business world, and now they're beginning to go, I wonder why this is the way it is. You know, how did this happen? But how do you help somebody kind of get into that place of being open to exploring new concepts?
Right. There's so many different ways of doing that. But even just that question,
mm-hmm.
just making up an imaginary. Okay, well, let's just say, for instance, you know, you're asking that person,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it were another way, how might it be? The imagination, you
mm-hmm.
know, is part of the highway to creating new experiences.
Right.
And so just turning on the imagination, I think, is one way to help people step out of whatever constricted reality they've created for themselves, you know, whatever set of rules, guidelines, beliefs, you know, through the imagination is one way to go.
You know, I'm kind of wondering if that isn't part of the reason that the Marvel comic book movies have become so incredibly popular. I mean, just selling tickets beyond belief. And this latest one, it crashed AMC, you know, when they went to buy tickets for it. And I think people are so tired of reality as it is that they are jumping into their imagination just to say, oh my goodness, just let me get someplace where I can
have a rest.
You know, be in a place that's fun, be in a place that has opportunities, because I think a lot of people are feeling like there's no opportunities.
Yeah, this is a challenging time in the world, I would say, at this point. But then that also, you know, crisis and sacred have the same root.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so whenever you're in, whenever there's a crisis point, there's also an opportunity for change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because people, especially, you know, I think in our country would like to see things be more harmonious and positive and well integrated and more good for more people. There's a lot of things I think a lot of people would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is through the imaginative process. And that's where, you know, part of why I care about mindfulness is that it shouldn't stop with, what do we call, butt on cushion awareness, okay? That's very nice. Like, it's very nice to be aware, you know, of your breath and what your mind is doing while butt on cushion. But hopefully we're able to take that into the world,
mm-hmm.
okay, and do something constructive to support the health, the wellness, you know, the basic needs of other human beings.
Right, because the one is just singular.
Yes.
And it's just all about me.
Yes.
And then the other is, how do you open that up? You know, like the lotus blossom.
Yeah.
So it has to be open in order to share.
Yes. And I mean, it's not that through consciousness. We mm-hmm. can affect the lives of many people. I understand that if one person completely realizes or achieves enlightenment, they're going to take many other people with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because of what happens in the energetic field.
Right.
But that doesn't relieve us as human beings of responsibility for our fellow travelers.
Right.
And in fact, I did want to share the very first time I remember hearing the word mindfulness. I was a little girl, maybe 5 or 6. And there was a program that came on before any TV shows came on in the morning. It was called the Russ Bird Morning Show, okay? And it was this regular down-home guy who played a guitar. And he played acoustic guitar and sang, like, folk music.
Uh-huh.
That was the first thing you could watch, you know, when you're, like, 6 or 7 or 5 and you wake up and it's too early to do anything else or even bother your parents.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the show, Russ Bird would say, "And remember, folks, be mindful of each other out there." And it caught my ears.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know whether that's because I knew something about it from a prior lifetime or there was something about, what is he saying? I didn't understand what he meant. So I asked my mom, I'm like, "Mom, what does this mean? Why does he say be mindful of each other?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, once again, open observation, you know, of a young person wondering, what is that? And she said, "Oh, that's like," and she did a good job. She said, "You know, how's she going to explain mindfulness to me? I'm a little girl." And she said, "Well, that's like if you're going to cross the street, you make sure everybody holds hands and looks both ways before you go across the street."
Mm-hmm. That was a good explanation for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's, for some reason, when we were talking about doing the show, that memory came back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how interesting that even that early, for whatever reason, that word was keying into my imagination, my wondering Kristen little self.
Right. And then it kind of has followed you all your life.
It has popped in pretty regularly, interestingly enough. And for the better and for the worse, you know, my mother actually brought me to yoga when I was young and took me to transcendental meditation. So the idea of, you know, mind, body, spirit, and following the breath and mantra was with me pretty early, you know, for a Western girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how do you feel about, I mean, right at the moment, you and I have talked about this mindfulness craze that's going on.
Right.
So, I mean, we have movie stars that are promoting it, and we have doctors that are promoting it if they're in the holistic field.
Right.
But how do you feel about everybody jumping on board now? Do you think there's a possibility, at least, that some of it might stick?
I think some of it, of course, is going to stick. I just would like to encourage people to don't just get the little ice cream off the top. Don't just get that little bit of whipped cream off the top of the, mm-hmm. of the thing, mm-hmm. you know. Go a little deeper. You know?
So how would they go about doing that?
Well, I think, you know, having some exploration into some kind of daily practices, like reading an article is good. You know, take a yoga class if you've never taken one. You know, get a small meditation practice going, you know, sitting quietly for 5 or 10 minutes a day. Actually, don't just read the article, you know, don't just know it's trendy. Do something toward cultivating more mindfulness in your life. And there's two elements here, and I was thinking about this on the way over. There's awareness for its as its own sake can elevate you. Okay, just because as you increase your sensitivity and your observational powers about what's going on inside you and around you, I believe that you are naturally more likely, by connecting with your intuitive wisdom and compassion, to make better choices, to be kinder, and that sort of thing. However, to do it with a mind toward that is going to speed up and fertilize that process. So when I am thinking about myself in terms of like internal dialogue, for instance, you know, something like 85% of the conversation we have is with ourselves. So if I find myself in my internal dialogue saying something that's not so nice to myself, or even describing myself to someone else in a way that's not so kind, that's a wake-up call. That I could be a little nicer to myself. And honestly, I feel like that's where, you know, a lot of it starts, you know, is what we are telling ourselves. And when we can start to be a little, and even the word compassion sometimes might be loaded for people, like they think it's too syrupy. Well, if you can't go with that, you could just go with leaving space, with acknowledging some space between when something happens to you in your life and reacting, to just get some quiet time in between what you might normally do in terms of a reaction and what you might like to choose to do. Just having a little pause. And I don't know who's teaching pause right now, but for a while, synchronistically, I was hearing everybody talking about the pause. But that pause is powerful. And there's pause in your thought, in your thoughts too. So like if you're trying to meditate, like a lot of people who have talked to me about meditation are like, well, I've tried that, but I can't do it and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wait a minute. You're making this too hard. There are very, very high levels of meditation that you can go into, you know, over the course of years under the right tutelage and all that. But you can also just have a very simple 10 or 15 minute a day shamatha, quiet practice of focusing on your breath or a candle or walking meditation, which will do more for you than you can ever imagine. However, it's not like, bam, you take a pill and you notice immediately. It comes in slowly and sort of, you know, it's mysteriously. Like it sort of mysteriously works its way into the inner inner workings of how you do things. And then you notice, oh, I didn't really react as strongly to that situation as I might have. Or I'm making a different choice, or I'm not as stressed out. So it's slow, you know, and it's really about consistency and noticing that when you fall off, you know, like, oh, wow, I'm getting really stressed out, or I'm getting really amped up. Or I was sharing with you this morning how I've had a knee injury for a couple of years. I ended a relationship almost like 9 months ago, and I've been in a lot of pain between my knee and my emotional center in my heart space. So I had disconnected a bit from my body because I was doing that as a self-protective thing, but in so doing, I was also getting, like my mind-body sequencing was getting out of whack, and I've had a couple fender benders, and I think it's because I was a little... my body mind integration was separated. And the good news is I have enough mindfulness background and I've done enough meditation over the years that when I reflect and ask myself, okay, why am I having these little crashes? I can go, aha, it's coming to me now. And so it's not that you're going to live, you know, perfectly without mistakes, or you're not going to be clumsy sometimes in your communications. But being able to go to the center point and calm yourself down gives you a place to work from. It gives you a place to regroup in. It gives you a place to reassess, you know, how you might want to handle something in the future, next time. So for me, it's a safety spot. It's a safe and secure spot where I'm going, my energy is inside my body and it's going up. For me, it's going up. You know, I feel spirit energy, you know, going up and coming down into my head and my feet and my body going down into the ground. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's almost like a sensing into my connection with all that is. And the personal practice that I do, if I am just like completely stressed out, like I am just frustrated, I can't get the results I want, I'm beside myself, is I just tell myself all I have to do is be part of the spiritual organic universe right now. That's all I have to do. That's all I'm doing. I'm just remembering that I'm part of that. And when I do that, there's no demands and I can feel the energetic support of everything in the organic and spiritual world.
You know, one of the things that happened yesterday is I had a gentleman that actually came into the business that I'm affiliated with, and he's going through some kind of tough times right now. And I had my inner balance with me, and so I clipped it to his ear and to his clothing and made sure that it was comfortable, and then showed him briefly how it worked. And then I had him use it, and I was absolutely amazed because I have it on a higher level than a beginner's level. And initially he started in blue. It wasn't even in red, because I had told him to go to a place in your mind that brings you peace. And he knew exactly where that was, and he was able to sit there, and it was blue for maybe 5 or 6 little beeps, and then it went to green and it stayed in green. So when we were done, you know, I took it off of him and everything and showed him the results. And I just said, you know, where did you go? And it was a shoreline up in Lake Superior, because he lives in the UP of Michigan, but it was a shoreline, and he knew exactly where it was, and he knew how much peace it brought him. So he was able to transport himself there very quickly. So I think that whole breathing and then being part of the universe, being part of nature, getting into that vibrational frequency is really what this is all about, you know, because we can eat well and we can, you know, have our PhDs piled higher and deeper. That's what my dad used to always say.
Yeah.
But we can do those things. And yet if we don't synchronize all of this together, it still does not bring us what we need in life. It doesn't give us that harmony. And mindfulness to me is a lot about living harmoniously, you know, with the universe, being part of it and yet apart.
Yeah, being in the world but not of it, per se.
Not of it, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of the, what was coming to me, sort of back to that idea of the practices that I do that are traditional,
mm-hmm.
take me to that place.
Okay.
Okay.
That, like he was,
yes,
with the shoreline.
Exactly. Okay. Those traditional practices. And once I go there, mm-hmm. like, I don't necessarily want to come back that soon.
I know.
Like in 10 minutes, you know.
Right.
And what, like for me personally, once uh-huh. I get going, I really wouldn't mind sitting doing it for 45 minutes, which,
right.
you know, I haven't had that type of committed daily practice for a while. There were years where I was counting what we call the nundra, which is sort of like your basic, you know, your bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I've counted many recitations of many mantras and done prostrations, because you're trying to build a foundation,
mm-hmm.
okay, of pure, you're cleaning out bad karma,
mm-hmm.
you know, bad patterns in your body field and your energetic field, and you're trying to build a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But of course that has to be maintained.
Right.
You know,
it's just like anything else.
Exactly. It has to be maintained.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are times in my life where I've been able to dedicate more time to sitting practice,
mm-hmm.
and times when I've dedicated less. But I always come back and I try to keep a certain amount of consistency with it. And then you can be portable with your mindfulness as well. You know, if you're washing dishes, if you're doing simple tasks where your mind is free to run around, you can take that as an opportunity to do something productive with your mind. You know, I have certain mantras that are, you know, are from my practice that I might say Vajrasattvas. That's a purification practice that goes with, you know, like when you're cleaning all the bad karma, you know, for myself and all the sentient beings.
Do you sweep it out the front door?
It goes down into the earth. We have a visualization that we do for that. Okay. Yama takes it. There's a certain deity that takes that karma and transforms it into compassion. So.
You know, when I was years ago, I had done an all-day workshop with Sun Bear. And mm-hmm. I think maybe we talked about this once upon a time. I don't know. But it was at Shaw's Botanical Garden in St. Louis. And one of the exercises that the Native Americans do is they dig a hole. Mm-hmm. So in the same instance that you're transporting the negative yes. karma deep into the earth,
yes.
the Native Americans live in longhouses all during the winter months.
Right.
And so, you know, they get on each other's nerves, just like regular people. And so at the end of winter, as spring is emerging, they dig this hole and they put either a kernel of corn or wheat or something into the hole. So out of adversity, out of negativity, can come something that is quite beautiful and healing. And so he was teaching even psychiatrists who were in high rises, have a deep litter box and use the litter box symbolically to do that, because, you know, people have a hard time sometimes imagining it, but if they're digging,
right,
you know, then they can see, okay, into this I am actually placing
right
anything that is destructive
yes.
to my well-being.
Yes.
And so it'd be very similar, but from a Native American point of view as opposed to from a Tibetan
right.
point of view.
Right. Well, the practice is actually, I often will say Tibetan Buddhism, it's actually called Vajrayana, and it's prevalent in Bhutan and in certain parts okay. of Sikkim and Tibet. So it's a whole region.
A region.
You know, it's a region. And yeah, and that negative energy goes down into a deity, and then the deity transforms it into compassion.
There you go.
So, yeah. So, you know, there's many, many, you know, so many wonderful practices, you know, that we can do. But I also feel there's a certain value. I'll just kind of expand it a little bit.
Okay.
So I want people to feel the value of being part of a spiritual community.
Okay.
Where you can kind of try out how is my mindfulness actually doing. Where you have to kind of stick with relationships maybe over time. Uh-huh. Like for me, you know, there's service obligations, you know, in like I also I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. So mm-hmm. like in Al-Anon, you do service and you learn, you're perfecting skills through the process that you're learning in Al-Anon, and then you're trying it out when you actually do service work. You know, how well can you get along with other people? Are you able to collaborate toward a common goal? Mm-hmm. You know, so you're taking it and you're trying it out. And one thing I've noticed is I think because there was a sort of maybe brittleness or rigidity that got into a lot of traditional spiritual or religious groups and organizations, a lot of people do not have a spiritual community where they can feel safe to grow their skills and express themselves. And I think it's important to have that, where it's a safe place to grow and try things, to expand who you are.
Uh-huh. In some instances, I think there's a fear that if I do try anything that's out of maybe this particular box, that I will be viewed in a negative way.
Right.
And so they don't even try. They
right.
don't even ask a question or think beyond the box.
Right. And that's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a shame that the some traditional environments aren't able to accommodate a person's individual journey,
right.
you know.
Right. Everybody has to be wearing the same uniform.
Right. and hopefully I think we are cultivating, though, in our culture, more and more different alternative environments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I just know for myself, over the course of my life, how valuable it has been to have long-term relationships with people who are on a similar spiritual path. Mm-hmm. Because I have friends in my Sangha that I've been friends with for 25 years. Right. And so they've seen, you know, the 25-year ago Kristen and this Kristen. And, you know, I may still have some challenge areas in my mindfulness and spiritual growth and development, but they can see my progress and I can see their progress.
Right. And you know, I've known each other for about 5 or 6 now.
Yeah, yeah.
And certainly we've seen each other go through some different dynamics.
Yeah, and it's fun. It feels for me that helps me. Mm-hmm. Those connections help me realize how much of a sort of, I would say, sometimes I refer to it as the psychic hotline, but it's our karmic and our spiritual connections that are beyond the physical,
right?
You know, that may go beyond this lifetime. Often I believe they do go beyond this lifetime, where we are working together, you know, perhaps over multiple lifetimes. And it helps me have perspective, okay, mm-hmm. on what am I doing with this particular lifetime? What is my mission this lifetime? And how does that fit in with the bigger picture of all of it? You know, it gives me perspective, which...
When you look back over, like, where you were 25 years ago, 2015, is it sort of mind-boggling? Because I know for me it is. You know, when I look back at how naive I was... when I first started my professional career and how maybe altruistic I was, thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to go out there and save the world. And where I am today, it does become more of a personal journey as opposed to I'm going to go fix things.
Right. Well, maybe you had like a save the world mindset. I was kind of like take no prisoners. You know, I was kind of the rebel. That's how I survived my, you know, early life. Mm-hmm. So over time, and particularly through compassion and mindfulness, I started to realize that rocking the boat wasn't always the best thing to do.
And some people fell out.
Yeah, I didn't really want to be disruptive per se, you know, just because, but I don't think I understood people's need for a certain amount of psychological comfort. Mm-hmm. And I was not compassionate, I don't think, with the way I might be very willing to disrupt someone's psychological comfort. And now I would not do that. Mm-hmm. You know, now I would be much more aware, okay, much more mindful, and move in what you're calling that sort of universal, harmonious way.
Right. It'd almost be like your mom saying, take each other's hands. So you wouldn't just be leading the way, you would take their hands and walk with them.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, or not, you know, I'm not even sure I was leading the way in the past. I was just saying, hey, there's something wrong with your path over there, you know. why aren't you over here doing it the way I do it, you know, or the way I want to do it? Mm-hmm. You know, many, you know, now I'm much more tolerant, you know, of the way, however people, understanding everyone's having their own personal experience, you know, and they have their own unique karma they have to deal with. And their own challenges or whatever. But that has to do with being okay yourself, you know, and as you grow yourself, it's much easier to accept others wherever they are, which I'm sure you understand because of your own personal journey and also being, you know, a therapist.
Right. Exactly. Huh. All right. So maybe what can you tell people who are listening to the show about the feelings that you have that are maybe protective and preserving of this whole concept? Like, you want to make sure that, you know, we've mentioned it a little bit, you know, that they don't just take the whipped cream off the top. They don't just dip their spoon in and say, oh, now I'm mindful.
Right.
So, because that doesn't work. And they'll be, I think, probably deeply disappointed that they're not going to feel any different.
Right.
If they just do it that way. So maybe a little guidance as to, I'm even wondering if the exercise Tai Chi does not help people be mindful.
Because, oh, yes.
That is one way that, especially for seniors or anybody over the age of 50, they're going to have better balance. They're going to be protecting themselves from falling and really injuring themselves because they're mindful of their body in these movements. So maybe that would be another way for people to go on this mindful journey. But, you know, some suggestions from you as to how to make that happen so they just don't get the cherry and leave all the rest.
Right. Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it's just something that you shouldn't just say, you know, oh, you know, check the box. If you can stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And staying with it, you know, could be so many, it could look, you know, like so many different things. And I was so happy because I told my mom the other night, we were having dinner, that I was going to be doing this talk. And she goes, oh, mindfulness. She goes, oh, yes, I'm very happy they're paying attention to that now because it affects every part of your life. You know, and this is my, you know, my mom who's 20 years older than me, mm-hmm. you know, and she's clear on that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, you know, it was, mm-hmm. I felt really supported that she liked what I was doing.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. You know, it mindfulness, I don't think it's exactly interchangeable with awareness, but it's very closely linked to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the part where I feel a little protective of Buddhism and the relationship with mindfulness is that you really don't want a free, something that's basically free to everyone to be completely exploited. Like, I would never want someone to think that in order for them to practice mindfulness, they have to spend a lot of money and you know,
learn how to do it
and take some big expensive class,
right.
or feel that there it's not available to them. Not that that couldn't be very valuable, but I would never want anyone to feel that they could not access their own awareness or their own mindfulness just by doing some simple things consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm both, I think it's okay that it's everywhere and it's on all the magazines because it brings more, you know, sort of focused attention in that direction. But at the same time, and then just the aspect that what are we actually focusing on being mindful about? What are the important things to be mindful about? Do I need to be mindful about how well I put my mascara on? Or do I need to be mindful about how I treat my neighbor in my neighborhood who has had a lot of hard times and has needed, you know, requested more of my attention in the last few weeks?
Right.
So that's kind of the thing too,
right.
That, you know, we need to prioritize where our energy goes in such a way that, of course, we all want to have our personal comforts, basic needs met, our certain amount of retirement income, whatever it is that we need to sustain ourselves and to live full and happy lives. But at the same time, you know, in our culture, you know, there has been an overfocus, I believe, you know, in a materialistic direction that has not been very good.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, do I need to be more mindful about what my stock portfolio looks like today? I want you to have a stock portfolio. I just want to make sure that people are thinking, you know, once again, about everybody, you know,
right.
Not just their
right.
own little niche of the universe, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
Because ultimately, there is no separation between us. And those of us that, you know, are intuitive and psychic and all that kind of business, we feel those connections very deeply.
Uh-huh.
And so we understand that on a very tacit, you know, tacit energetic level.
Uh-huh.
Now, some people are more sensitive, some people are less sensitive. You know, they may or may not have cultivated those kind of direct awarenesses. You know, but we are living on one planet currently. I mean, you know, until we mm-hmm. populate another planet, and we need to start thinking like a bunch of people living on one planet, not a whole bunch of divided up, you know, households, individuals. We need to start thinking more collectively about what's good for everyone.
Right. That's very, very true. One of the thoughts that I had as you were talking is, you know, like people, if they have a garden, you know, if they're working in the garden, if they're watering the garden, if they're weeding the garden, if they're pruning the garden, all of that can be a mindful exercise because your focus is there. I think I had read a book where this particular monk became very aware of the dishes that he washed, so that as he was washing dishes for the monastery, that he was aware of each glass, each plate, each piece of silverware. And we just throw things in the dishwasher for the most part, you know, the majority of us do. But that focus of being able to say, this is what I am currently doing, rather than doing something and not even having your attention there. And that brings up one other thing, just as a side note for mindfulness, is they followed a group of drivers for 6 months. They put cameras in the car. And these were people who swore that they never checked their email, that they never text while they were driving. And then they watch them, you know, and I guess probably they forgot that the cameras were rolling. And so now they showed these individuals, and sure enough, they were absolutely checking their text. They were checking, you know, sending a text, checking an email, putting on mascara as they were going to work. There was one gal who was eating a sandwich with both hands while she was driving. And I was like, oh my goodness, this would definitely be a mindfulness time. Like, think about what you're doing out there on the highway. And I, you know, so mindfulness is something that we can bring to every aspect of our life.
Yeah. And actually, when your mind is in the same place as your body, you mm-hmm. will feel better.
Yes.
Okay. You will be more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's more, it's somehow, it's just healthier when your mind and your body are in the same place at the same time.
Right.
It just feels better.
Right.
And those little exercises, like, okay, I'm washing this dish. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's a way to get a break. If you have one of those minds that's very chattery, mm-hmm. you know, I honestly, I have to say, I am so grateful to my life practice, because people will say, oh, you know, just think of all the things you could be thinking about in that amount of time or whatever. And I'm like, not me. I'm listening to the, I'm usually focusing in on something I want
right.
to do. I'm saying a mantra in the car. I'm listening to a radio program. Whatever I'm doing that. I'm usually not thinking about a whole
right.
bunch of other things.
Right.
Not that I don't think about a lot of things, but usually when I'm doing that, I'm doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it because I can't not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. You know, in order to be creative and productive with your thoughts, you kind of have to choose which ones you're doing at what particular time.
So how would you use that? For instance, I would say that a lot of the people that are listening are pretty stressed in,
yeah.
in many aspects of their life. So how could they use mindfulness at a stressful moment to switch gears so that they weren't in the stressful moment maybe so much anymore,
right?
And they could take a detour at
right.
least for 5 minutes over here,
right? Well, the first thing is noticing that you're getting stressed.
Okay, so okay. they could check their breathing, their pulse, right? They'd feel it.
Yep. And tension, you know, body tension,
yeah.
Heart rate, mm-hmm. tone of voice, you
mm-hmm.
know, for me it's the tone. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the first thing that goes for me is
the voice.
Oh, my tone just goes bad if I'm stressed, and
mm-hmm.
I get in trouble for that.
Do you find that the pitch, like, goes higher if you're stressed?
I don't know about the pitch. It's something about, it's the tone.
So
like
the
I sound snarky.
Oh,
I just
okay.
sound snarky.
Okay.
Okay.
So if somebody had heard that from maybe a partner, a coworker, then that would be a key to start listening to my voice. To see where my voice is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, either way, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you start to hear that in somebody
mm-hmm.
else's voice, if you
mm-hmm.
hear volume or
mm-hmm.
if you hear snark,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm calling it snark, but you know,
then
you can pretty much assume stress level is going up.
It's going up.
Yeah.
Right.
And really being aware that this is a shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're talking with somebody and their stress level is going up, this is not the time to be driving your point home.
Right.
You know, because they're not going to be receptive. They're not going to be able to...
Well, they can't hear.
No, they can't really hear.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to feel better before you can really do any kind of productive
right.
problem solving on whatever's going on.
Right.
So, I accidentally slipped the other day with my son. And I was having a need at the same time he was on break from work. And we don't talk about anything when he's on break from work because that's his decompression period.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I started talking about something because I was on a roll about something. And he's like, Mom, I have to decompress. Please stop talking to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm really sorry.
Well, he was able to get your attention. And that was good.
Yeah. And then later I said, honey, I apologize again. I'm really sorry, honey. I know that you need that time to decompress.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily he knows that. He knows that when he's on break, he's on break. That's it.
Mm-hmm. He needs to go out and find a butterfly to watch.
Yeah. Well, he does his own, he does little other things, you know, when
yeah.
he's on break. He's in the
yeah.
house doing little, you know, he likes to go to the internet. That's going to make him feel better.
Okay.
You know, because when he's at work, he's dealing with people.
Right.
So when he gets home, he just wants to kind of like...
Zone out.
Yeah. Zone out a little or let's watch, you know, look at Reddit. That's the other thing is, you know yourself what relaxes you. Okay, you know yourself what makes you feel better. So don't think that you have to go by what other people would tell you. Yeah, would you like, let's do just like a little quick mindfulness check-in.
Okay, because I know we're down to like about 10 minutes.
Let's do a quick mindfulness check-in.
Okay.
So one of the things that you can do is to just get into, when you're turning into what's going on with your body, mind, spirit. So one thing you can do is just take a minute and stop doing whatever you're doing. And one of the things I've noticed that a lot of times people are not tuning in to their emotional feelings. Uh-huh. They don't know if they're feeling irritated, stressed. Well, stress is kind of like global, but they might be feeling irritated, sad, excited. They don't even know, what they're feeling. Uh-huh. And
where they're feeling it in their body.
Right, and where it might be in their body. Uh-huh. I think for a lot of times, for a lot of people, that could be in your stomach area. Right, a lot of people have their feelings in their stomachs. So just take a second, if you're listening now, and take a break from what you're doing and stop thinking about what you're thinking about. Or if you're writing, put down your pen or pencil. If you're typing or if you're on Facebook, just take a breath and maybe close your eyes. Sometimes closing your eyes helps you direct your energy and awareness internally. You don't have to, but sometimes that helps.
If you're driving, please don't.
Yeah, if you're driving, don't do that. And just see if you can be in touch with anything that's inside your stomach right now, or any other part of your body. Do you feel tension in your neck and your shoulders? Is there a feeling down in there someplace that you haven't been paying attention to? And then, if you do get a feeling, maybe you're like, irritated, ask that irritation to talk to you. And you would be surprised
at what it says.
Exactly. So your body can tell you a lot of things, and your subconscious mind can tell you a lot of things. And that's part of what, mindfulness can help you get deeper into that, the deep listening into your subconscious as well. Okay, so if you have anything there, that's something to follow up with later on. And another thing that you can do with your mindfulness that's helpful is if you happen to right now be thinking about a lot of different things, creative ideas or lists or whatever, or, things you need to get done, just take a minute and break off and write down what's going through your mind. Instead of allowing it to just keep churning and churning, just take a few minutes. And I try to keep like paper at the ready all the time. Or if you like to use your telephone, you can put it on record and write, put those messages of things that you want to accomplish or creative ideas that you have, so that your mind is free and can be calm.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if there was something. Oh, yeah. And if there's any aches and pains in your body, that's also something that you might want to be tuning into. Okay, there could be some messages. If you have a chronic pain, don't ignore that. Sometimes, often, there's a message related to issues in your life that might need to be addressed. Of course, just following up with a physician, if you have something that's going on and you feel like it needs medical attention. This is part of mindfulness, tuning into what's going on inside ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know for me, I'm like you, I keep paper handy, and mm-hmm. I think when I write books and articles, and so I think when you are a writer, that is the way you communicate. And if I'm laying in bed, and this has happened to me so many times over this last year, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and I cannot go to sleep because all of these thoughts are there, I'll just get up. There's no point in laying there trying to sleep, and I get up and I come put it down on paper. And then I can go to sleep. But until I do that. So I don't know whether that's happened to you or not.
Yeah, usually it's not at sleep time. But if I'm not focusing well, mm-hmm. If I find like the squirrel cage is starting mm-hmm. to roll too fast, mm-hmm. straight to paper.
Mm-hmm.
And often what I do is I create like a pie-shaped chart with mm-hmm. a whole bunch of different categories in it. Mm-hmm. And I like to put the thoughts in those categories.
Oh, okay.
Because then it's easier for me to get back to them. Okay, is it health? Is it dharma? Is it work? Is it money? And I just have this little pie chart, and then I put it on the fridge, and it's there, then it's there for me, and then I can go back to it. So I just wanted to give you encouragement, about following up with mindfulness. There's many mindfulness groups now, in local areas. that you might be able to get involved in if it's something that you want to, you know, pursue more actively. There are good internet courses, you know, or you can just like launch in on your own. You know, you can just start saying, okay, for 10 minutes a day, I'm going to sit quietly and look at a candle and follow my breath. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to take a 10 or 15 minute nature walk every day.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, complicated. It can be a very straightforward thing that you decide to do and you commit to doing. Or even like when you go to bed at night, maybe you're going to do the progressive muscle relaxation where you mm-hmm. tense up all the little parts of your body and release them. Mm-hmm. You know, or if you're if you feel that you'll be better off, if you feel like your mind is very busy and you feel like you'll be better off doing something physical, you know, take a dance class or yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong. Any of those practices are going to enhance your mindfulness. Oddly enough, for me, I took belly dancing because mm-hmm. I had a hard time, I had kind of an upper lower body split thing going on, and I have to really concentrate when I do belly dancing, and there is no way that I can have thoughts. So that I have to really get in my body. So for me, that was another way to enhance my body-mind connection. Yeah, through dance.
Well, and dance again is wonderful for just, you know, the whole, it is a mind-body, but it's also contact. And especially if you're doing dancing with somebody else. So if it was ballroom dancing, which they highly recommend for seniors, then it's touch, but it's also balance and it's also engaging the brain. And so people that are becoming a little more forgetful, it's a way to refocus. So there's so many things that we, I think, forget, you know, in our busy, busy, busy lives today.
Yeah, they're saying that music and dancing mm-hmm. is the best way to stave off dementia and mm-hmm. Alzheimer's.
And Alzheimer's, absolutely.
So I just want to say quickly, on the 18th when I come back, mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to sharing more about how I have connected mindfulness into the different areas that are important to me.
And that'll be awesome to hear.
So I'm calling that the six C's, which is compassion, consciousness, clarity, creativity, collaboration, and contribution.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back. Next week is going to be my next session, actually, with Bob Kilpatrick. And as some of you know, he is the co-owner of Boomers Forever Young. And so he's going to be talking with me about diabetes. And diabetic conditions are just skyrocketing in America right now. More than 50% of the population is either pre-diabetic or diabetic. And of course, there are just a slew of physical problems that ensue once you become pre-diabetic. So then it's not a matter of changing your lifestyle. It's if you want to live, you know, a longer life, you have to get in control of that. So Bob's going to be discussing that with our listenership, you know, next week. And again, I would encourage people, we've talked about the inner balance. If you want to go to Heart Math Institute, Google that. It is out in California. There is just some wonderful, wonderful videos that are on that site. And the device that I've been talking about, Inner Balance, you can actually find it if you go to synergyconnectionradio.com and go into the Boomer, you know, the website for Boomers. You'll see it under new products. And we don't actually sell it at Boomers, but what happens is the link will take you to the Heart Math Institute and you will be purchasing it from them. I don't know that there's anything else that I need to necessarily share at this particular time other than I am so thankful and grateful that you have chosen to be with me on a regular basis here at Synergy Connection Radio. And it's just fun having like-minded people come in and talk, and you know, they have an opportunity, I feel, to share their wisdom with everyone out there that's listening, and hopefully it will allow you to turn your lives around and kind of what I call braid the spiritual, the mental, the physical, and the emotional aspects of who we are. Because we're certainly not just one being. We are a very complicated, vibrational, energetic being that relates to the world. And the better we understand ourselves, the more opportunity we have, I think, to do good in the world.
And absolutely, Lucy, and thank you ever so much for the opportunity to share this time with you once again.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. So everybody go out there and make it your best life.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.